Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
From 104.5 The Zone, this is the Midday 180, served up by Wendy's, with Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski.
It is the Midday 180, served up by Wendy's. We're all here. David Reed is the chairman of the board. 11:02 the time, every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Doug Matthews is in studio with us. Also, Greg Cosell coming up at 12:15. But before Cosell, we always go on the road with Doug Matthews, presented by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. Remember, booze it and lose it. Lose your license, your freedom, your life. Sponsored by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, helping you arrive. Doug, always great to have you in.
Good to be here. I made sure I got in my contract this year that I went on before Cosell.
Not after.
I do not like to go on after Cosell.
You enjoy listening to Cosell,
though.
He's
great. He is great. I don't know where he gets all the time to obviously look at what he looks at. But
here's a preview of what's to come today. He spent yesterday 6 hours watching Titans-Eagles because he does breakdowns for the Eagles and, of course, comes on our show. And he sent me a text saying that. So I can't wait to dive in with what he has.
No doubt about that.
Plenty to discuss with the Tennessee Volunteers as they enter an open week prior to playing Auburn a week from Saturday. Just, Doug, overall assessment as we sit here today after the Georgia game of where they are versus where you thought they'd be, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Record-wise, it's probably about the same. But product-wise, what do you think about what you've seen so far on the field?
Well, just in a nutshell, I would say improving almost every week defensively and not improving much at all offensively. Now, the improvement from game Florida game to Georgia game offensively was didn't turn the ball over. But as far as getting being productive and kind of trying to see exactly where they're going, I would say not much there. But defensively, getting better, I think, each and every week at the fundamentals part of the game. And the other part of it is, in my mind at least, this team is I don't know if significantly better, but they're better athletically on offense. They should be better offensively than defensively, just if you look at the talent. But I think it's just the opposite now. And quite honestly, as far as getting better, not talent-wise, and quite honestly, I think a lot of it has to do with is that's where the head football coach spends 95% of his time. That's why, in my mind at least, that's why the defense is improving at the fundamental part of the game much better and quicker than the offense is.
I want to get into, you mentioned the talent that they have on offense. I remember a couple of weeks ago you saying to us and saying on the weekend shows that they're good enough for SEC play at quarterback. They're good enough for SEC play at running back, at wide receiver. Why have we not seen those pieces come together more than what we have?
Well, I think that's one of the big questions that I am fairly sure of this, and again, none of this that I'm going to say comes from anybody on that staff telling me this, but in open dates, normally what you do is you take part of that open date and you really look at yourself. You know, what are we, you try to do that all the time, but during game week, you don't have time to do that much. Now you do. What are we trying to get done here? And I'm sure the head coach this particular week has spent a lot of time in that offensive staff room. Chalk Talk this week and Big Orange Sunday this week will be talking a lot about that. And I imagine that he's had a lot of questions about why we are doing some things and why we're not doing others. And I think you'll probably see a different maybe outlook, not approach, not scheme, but maybe a little outlook, a different outlook coming out of this off week, because it's a great time to just look at yourself. Now, they're also out recruiting too. I don't know that the whole staff will be there, but I would guess that probably the offensive coordinator, Tyson Helton and probably Will Friend, the line coach, probably will spend a pretty good amount of time with this head coach this week, just looking at what are we trying to get done? How come we're not trying to get some of the things that I, as the head coach, expect us to get done?
What do you expect? What would you like to see offensively, and just sort of a change of approach of how to get things done on that side of the ball?
Well, and first of all, let's talk about the positives. The only one turnover, and that was late in the ball game that affected the score, but it didn't affect the outcome. Banks have fumbled the ball there. But the other part of it, late the game, but I think probably the number one thing that I would really be harping on is we got to get the ball to our guys that can make plays, and we're not doing that. There's only one player on that team right now that has shown that he can take the ball and make a big play, and that's number 8, Chandler. Now, 84 has at some time, but he's a wide receiver. I don't think we're getting the ball enough, and again, just personally, to number 15. I don't think Jennings is getting the ball enough. You got to get the ball to your playmakers. Ty Chandler touched the ball 9 times in that game. That's not even – if he didn't touch it 18 to 20 times, to me, if I'm the head football coach, I want to know why. Why is he not touching the ball? Because he is the one guy that can take – we've seen him take kickoffs back. We've seen him take passes and make good long runs. He has the speed and the athletic ability to do that. I would expect coming out of this game, into this next game, you're probably gonna see him touch the ball more.
Is there anything that impresses you about Tyson Helton? Is there something you like?
No, but let me say why on that. And again, I'm going to spend a good chunk of Big Orange Sunday talking about this, but he is really a first-time offensive coordinator. Now, I know he had the title at Western Kentucky, but Jeff Brohm was the head coach, and Jeff Brohm called the plays. I know that he had the title at Southern Cal, but Clay Helton was the head coach, and Clay Helton had the major part of the game plan on that. So he's young. He's new at this thing. I think he's trying to figure out exactly what they can do. I've been in this position on offense. One of the problems on offense is they're expected to keep the other team's offense off the field. So they got to run the clock and they got to maybe do something. It's neat to say, hey, let's throw the ball down the field 3 times. If you get 3 incomplete passes and your defense is out there again against a Georgia or an Alabama. So I think that's part of it. But no, he's kind of, I think, learning on the run. I don't mean that in a bad way. We've all been there before. Here's just one quick thing on that, Paul. If you look at this staff, the defensive staff, everybody on that defensive staff except Terry Fair, every single one of them have been with Coach Pruitt coaching at other places many times. They've all been defensive coordinators. And of course, he is there also. The offensive staff, really the only guy that he really knows and has spent time with is Will Friend. All the other offensive guys, a couple of them are, the Niedermeyer youngster tied in. He's a recruiter. That's kind of learning. But Will Friend's really the only one. So again, I think that's why he will get a little bit more involved in that area. Just one final thing on that part of it. I think we talked about this before. He has made the decision, Coach Pruitt, that he is going to coach the defense, and I think it's wise. He's going to get that defense squared away. He knows that long-term in this league, if you can't play defense, it don't make any difference how many points you can score. You can't score enough. But when you do that, if your 95% of your time is on the defensive side of the ball and the other 5% is head coaching duties, it's hard to go in that other room much and kind of see exactly what they're doing. And he knows what they're doing, but kind of make his thoughts known on that. I think it's exactly the right thing to do, but that part of it is, if there is something that is overlooked, it has to be on the offensive side of the ball, and hopefully he'll try to get that straight this week.
How would you rate the coaching job on defense led by Jeremy Pruitt so far based on the talent they currently have on the roster?
Well, I think they're getting about everything they could out of it. I started Sunday's show about kind of talking about golf, the Ryder Cup last week. How many times have you heard a golfer say that, well, I got about everything out of that round I could? Well, I think that's what Jeremy Pruitt and defensively, I think they're getting about all they can. the better players, and you can see them coming. You don't have to, you know, you can see those young guys coming. There's probably three freshmen and a sophomore in that secondary that's going to be playing more and more. You see them making some plays. You know, it was great to see Darryl Taylor play. I think the best game he's played at Tennessee. Caused three fumbles, a sack. But they're just not real talented, and they're going to be. There's a ceiling, and they're probably there. Now, they can get better fundamentally. They can get better tackling. But most of the tackles that they missed Saturday were not out-of-position tackles. They just didn't quite get there, and that's athletic ability, and, of course, playing against the other guys. So, but I think defensively they're playing at a pretty high level as far as what their talent will allow them to do.
So, Doug, after the game, Jeremy Pruitt was talking about the second half and his team's fight, and he got choked up and kind of composed himself and went on to say that this team's experienced a lot of negative, but the level of fight that he saw in the second half, because Georgia is a team, he said, I know how they want to play, and they want to affect the way you think, and they did not affect the way we thought over the course of the game, and he said, that excites me, and got a little emotional about it. What do you think when you see a coach? I know you don't even watch the post-game press conference or listen to it, but when you hear something like that, is that something that resonates with your locker room?
Well, absolutely, and it's not surprising. And here's why. You know, at heart, to different degrees, you know, all coaches are teachers. And you know, I can think back just to some teachers that I had in school that when old Delbert finally got 1-1 as 2, you know, boy, they were it was emotional because he wasn't able to get 1-1 being 2.
Apparently. Delbert had a tough time in math.
Or Doug, you know. But that, and that's exactly why I think this Georgia game, and I have, again, this is just opinion, I think this was the first game that Coach Pruitt felt like that his team overall really played hard for 60 minutes and went out and fought for 60 minutes, made some mistakes, but improved on the things they wanted to improve on. And that's really what he's trying to get built now. And if you have that, then you can start getting better. Until you have that, you cannot continue getting better. And I think that's exactly what the emotions that he had on that. This is what I've been trying to teach these guys starting last spring, and finally, four games into it, we finally got to the point where we are at least close to being able to play 60 minutes.
Let's talk teaching right now, because you're right. This is something Jeremy Pruitt talks about all the time, about how we play and how we want them to play. And certain guys will do it and a lot of guys won't. The players are going to get there when they get there. You know, the team's going to be more talented when they bring in better talent and they start playing. Can you establish that baseline of how you play over the course of one long season? As this season goes on, could you get to a point that by the end of November, Jeremy Pruitt goes in the offseason and says, all right, the guys that are here now know the expectation, and we can work with that moving forward? Or is that unrealistic to expect from a teaching standpoint in 1 year?
No, I think it'll happen before then. That's one of the reasons why I brought Brandon Kennedy in. Brandon Kennedy is not an outstanding lineman. I mean, if he was at Alabama, you wouldn't even know he was at Alabama. But he knew, Jeremy Pruitt knew, Coach Pruitt knew, that this guy knows how we need to practice here because he's been doing it for 3 years now. One of the things I heard him say that really stood out to me was there was some question in one of the after-practice press conferences or pressers that asked him about players' development. He said, you know, the best players, and he used Alabama, and he always quickly says, and I'm glad he says this, or you know, I can only talk about Alabama because that's where I've been. You know, I hadn't been here. But he said our best players, and he ran through a bunch of them that were first-round draft choices, started off, they were on our scout squad. And I knew as a coordinator, defensive coordinator, that these guys were going to be good players on offense because of the way they practiced against me when nobody was watching them. And I think that's what he wants to establish. You know, you look at the guys that don't play in games for him, and there's been, defensively especially, almost every game there's a guy or two that didn't play much. And you say, why didn't that guy play? Is he hurt? No.
And a guy who played a lot maybe the game before or 2 weeks before.
But is he hurt? No, it's because he wasn't doing in practice or in the previous game what he expected from an effort standpoint. That's why he sets him on the bench. And then if you'll notice, the next week they normally play a good bit, and they play pretty well because – hey, the reason I'm not putting you out there is I don't care if we get beat 100-0. You ain't playing the way that we got to play around here. And I think that's his teaching method, and it's working very, very well. Listen, there's no doubt in my mind about this guy. I don't know how good a head coach he's going to be. I don't know how good a game day guy he's going to be. But I know this about him because I've watched him do it at too many other places and in practice up in Knoxville. This guy is a on-the-field teacher of football, especially on the defensive side. So from that standpoint, I have no question that he will get this program where it needs to be. Now, you got to recruit, and then you got to do things during the game. So, and we'll find out about the recruiting later on this year.
Because you've seen him work and practice more than a lot of people out there have seen him, you're uniquely qualified to answer this. I remember a long time ago, Coach, you were talking about Nick Saban, and you said what impresses you the most about him, I think it was maybe something they did behind the scenes at ESPN, where when he speaks, watch the faces of his players. No one's cutting up. No one's looking away. He's got everyone's attention the moment he utters any words, and they're all looking right at him. And you could tell something was special about that when you were watching it. You've watched Jeremy Pruitt work. Does he have that level of respect from his team where when he speaks, guys better listen or else at that point?
Well, I watched him in preseason, and then one time after the first ball game. At that point, no. But it's because they didn't understand. You know, you have to be a little older, but remember the old E.F. Hutton commercial?
When E.F. Hutton speaks.
And then they kind of everybody turn. That, you're right about Saban. That's what it's going to be with Pruitt, too. And his way of doing it is he just won't play you. You know that's fine. You know,
you mentioned before the bench is a great motivator.
Well,
maybe the best.
And he uses it. Every coach says that, but he uses it. Those players normally that aren't playing, and there's been two or three young defensive backs that are going to be very good football players. The reason they don't play a lot of snaps is sets them on the bench. I think that was one reason, probably why Cardae Sapp didn't play the week before against Florida. And this week he played a lot. And my guess is, after his talk after the Florida game with the head football coach, he probably had a really good week of practice, so he got to play this week.
How difficult is it to gain that attention from the players when you're losing?
It's not difficult at all, John, because if you demand it. You know, we all, it's just like parents. If you demand something and every day you demand it, hey, you're gonna wash those dishes. Now, you can whine and moan and do everything, but it may take you you're going to wash those dishes, but you have to demand it every single day, especially when you're building a program. And then what he talks about so much, and every successful coach talks about this, if you get this class doing it, then next year they'll help teach the next class, and then before long you got four or five classes who all understand the way we do things around here. I think that's one reason, getting a little off topic, why Kentucky is doing well now. They've had 5 or 6 years of Mark Stoops teaching what he wants, and they're better athletically, but they're finally playing the way he wants them to play.
What did you think of the comments that he made on Vol Calls last week when he was asked about recruiting? And he said his message was to those guys, be glad you're not on this team. What message does that send to this team?
I did not hear him say it. I don't know the context he said it in. My guess is, this is the way recruiting is. When a new staff comes in, this was proven over before I was born, your first 2 years, you're going to get a big, recruits are going to listen to you. You know, hey, you can come here and play, or we're going to get better. After 2 years, that third year, you better start showing some wins, and you better start showing you can beat Alabama and beat Georgia.
Staying power.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's when you lose out on recruit. If they don't win another ball game, they're going to have a good recruiting class because this is a good recruiting group. And these guys know they can come in and play. And I think that's probably what he was trying to say there.
I mean, I like the honesty. I'm not faulting him for it.
And he said it in a way that was like, well, the good news is you're not on this team.
Right.
When they ask about the product on the field now, and this is going to be my worst year here. He said that publicly also. He said, moving forward.
That was
forward,
after the Florida game.
And my guess is that I don't know that any player even asked that recruit. I really don't. They don't get into what's happening there. They go up there and they see that crowd and they see that stadium and they see those championship banners hanging in the Anderson football facility. And most of these coaches, there's about five guys on this staff that have already been recruiting. These guys that are coming in from Georgia and North Carolina and Florida and Alabama, high school players, they've already been recruited by about five guys on this staff. Most of them, I would say, in Georgia have been recruited by Jeremy Pruitt. So they already know him because he's been recruiting their school for longer than they've been there. So the question that rarely ever came up when I was recruiting at any place was, you know, how come you're not very good this year? Or a few times they didn't say, how come you're really good this year? So it didn't ever come up. They want to know if they're going to, mama wants to know that where they're going to live, what they're going to eat, who's going to make sure they go to school. And son wants to know.
Are they safe?
And daddy may not want to know anything.
Right.
There may be one out of every 30 dads ever had a say in much guys I recruited. And the player wants to know, where am I going to practice? You know, who's going to be my coach? Where do you see me fitting in here? And we recruited a few that they were just happy to be there. They didn't ask any questions. You normally don't want those guys.
Doug, let's get into a topic you're going to really dive in with on Saturday morning with Forklift Systems Football Saturday. The differences that everyone can notice from an offensive and defensive play caller. What's the first thing? Just by looking at a play caller, you could probably tell if he's an offensive or defensive play caller just by looking at what he's holding.
Well, yeah, defensive guys are usually look a lot smarter than offensive guys do. No,
right.
You know, I've been working on this, going to do a few segments on it, probably carry that through the end of the year, but it's what I call the feel, F-E-E-L, of play calling. And it's always been interesting to me that you just think about looking at the sideline. Offensive coordinator's down there on the sideline. He's got this big laminated, sometimes it's a folder that he's always looking at. He's got every play that's ever been drawn up. You know, you run maybe 70 plays in a game. He's got 300 of them on his play call sheet. You know what I mean? They script what I'm going to be doing, this play and all these different things. And then you flip over and you look at the defensive coach over there on the sideline. And he's just standing there with nothing. He's just looking, seeing who they're going to put out on the field. And then he gives a couple of signals, and they run it. And it's always interesting to me. I've always thought this about offensive coordinators. They want to show you how smart they are. You know, that I can do all these different things. I remember when Al Saunders first came in the University of Tennessee as an offensive coordinator. Of course, he was a head coach with the Chargers also. He had this playbook that was about 8 inches thick of all of these plays on there. And then we looked at our defensive playbook, and it had about 3 sheets in there. But bottom line is this, it's all about feel. And the best play callers, I don't care if they're on offense or defense, the best play callers do it by feel of the game. I'm going to mention two names. Who would be, if people were going to, and we're talking about college now, not pros, who would be the number one on the list of play callers of the last 30 years in college football? Offensive play callers. Who would be your number one guy?
Steve Spurrier.
Did you ever see Steve Spurrier have a headset on? Only when the defense was on the field. Did you ever see him looking down at a sheet of paper to see what he was going to call? Oh, I forgot we had that play. No. He went by feel. He saw what the defense is doing. He called plays, and he would rip you a new one if you didn't change it up pretty good. So the other guy, the guy that I work for, Bill Dooley, who most people would not know.
One of your mentors.
My ninth year of coaching, I left a job. I'd been a defensive coach my whole first 8 years. My ninth year, I went to Virginia Tech because I wanted to learn the I formation from the best. There were two guys that were great head coaches. John McKay out at Southern Cal, he wasn't interested in hiring me for some reason, and Bill Dooley did.
Did you try to go to Southern Cal?
No. But Bill Dooley did. And I went to Virginia Tech, and I watched him. He called all the plays as the head coach also. He never, ever had a play sheet. He knew what he wanted to run. He knew his plays. He looked at what they were giving him, and then he gave it to him. And I think that what happens so often is that offensive play callers sometimes have so much they're looking at, instead of just saying, hey, how's the game going? Let's go back to what we were talking about against Georgia. If I'm the offensive play caller, I said, you know, I've only got old Chandler the ball three times in the first half. I think maybe I need to get it to him. You know, that's what I'm talking about. So I'm going to kind of build on that on these deals on how it's about a feel game. The best coaches that I was ever around, both offensively and defensive play callers. And listen, there is a difference between play calling and coordinating. A coordinator coordinates everything, gets practice and gets the game plan. A play caller during the game, those guys that can call plays during the game, both offense and defense, they are more than worth their made. Best size ever around on offense and defense was Ken Donahue. Of course, he was on five or six national championships as Bear Bryant's defensive coordinator. He came to Knoxville and he was with us for 3 years at Tennessee. And watching him get the feel for a game and make those adjustments and just shut people's water off was impressive. I never had that ability. I think a very good practice coach, game plan. I never had that feel during games. The guys that have the feel, that's where you see them get those plays. Where'd that thing come from?
When did you know that you didn't?
When I started being a coordinator.
Like first game?
Immediately?
Yeah, almost immediately. But let me tell you what I did. So we just lined up and played. I mean, I don't think enough coaches.
Did you tell your boss this feeling?
Huh?
Did you tell your boss?
He probably
this
knew it. But I wasn't terrible, but I wasn't Ken Donahue is what I mean. But you know, there's only so much you can do. You line them up, and then you let your guys go make plays. It ain't real hard, you know? I mean, it's really not. What do the New England Patriots do on offense? They line up, and they let Tom Brady make plays. What's the Chiefs doing now? They give you all this different stuff, but they line up, and they let their quarterback make plays. I think that's what you have to do on defense, and not enough teams do it. The good ones do. The good ones do very simple things on defense. They got a couple little stunts they're going to bring. You know, you get to moving the ball, we'll do this. You mentioned Jim Schwartz. He's a perfect example of that. What do we, you know, we saw it here when he was with the Titans. We see it with the Eagles. They're going to let you kind of move the ball. But, boy, you get inside about that 40-yard line, they're going to start coming after you. And that's having a feel for the game.
Let's tie this back into Tyson Helton in the offense. As you mentioned, Coach, first-time offensive coordinator, it's easy to watch the games and say right now he doesn't really have a feel for it in terms of play calling in-game. Can you develop that? You also can't say the guy can't do the job five games in as an offensive coordinator, someone with a pretty limited team in terms of the offensive line and how they're playing. But is that something you can develop as a coach and as a coordinator and start to get a better feel for your guys on your roster and for the game?
Absolutely, and the smart ones will. Now, again, I want to make sure we're differentiating here. I'm not talking about coordinating. He is the offensive coordinator. I'm talking about
play calling
during a ball game. And there have been teams, I've coached on teams where the play caller was not the offense coordinator or defense coordinator. Because a coordinator's job, again, is to assemble all the information, get everybody doing the way
organization.
We want. Yeah, but then you got a play caller. A head football coach, in most instances, that's not calling plays one side. That's what he does. He's the one that's sitting there saying, hey, John, I'm not going to tell you what play to call, but I want to throw the ball more. Or, hey, when we get down inside the 50-yard line, I want to see us start hammering that ball a little bit more. That's what the good head coaches do, and that's what the good play callers do.
615-737-1045. Let's go around the SEC when we return. Doug's going to tell us the leading, the SEC team with the leading passer currently.
Just think about this, without looking it up from history and what we know about, we got all these great passing teams in this league. Which team is leading the SEC four games in total pass yardage? Who would you, just think about who you would put up there. Who do you think, we got a lot of good passing teams. Which one of them's leading right now?
I know he's getting at something that we're not expecting. So,
act like you expect it.
LSU.
Vandy.
I was going to guess Vandy, too.
No, not even close. The number one passing team in the Southeastern Conference, yardage-wise.
Oh, I know where you're going now.
Is Alabama.
Yep.
Now, if there was one, let me tell you what, I go.
Well, not necessarily, Paul, because they're not known for yardage in the passing game.
They're a running team. Yeah. I mean, you would think they were going to throw it some. They're averaging 335 yards passing per game. They've had 20 touchdowns and one interception. Now think about that. Alabama, who runs the ball a lot, and they're still running a lot, by the way, but what have they done down there? And I bring this up just to say this is what smart coaches do. I'm going to give you just real quickly before we go around the SEC. In my era, the reason that Bear Bryant is so respected by coaches is not because of the national championships. That's part of it. It's because that he won national championships in three or four different types of offenses, and that he was willing. He wasn't married to any one thing. Woody Hayes, who is also a great coach, his whole career is 3 yards a cloud of dust. You know, and when the rules change, he didn't change with them in that regard. Still a great coach. Bear Bryant won on defense and not running and punting the ball in the 60s national championship. He won the I formation with Namath and Stabler in that group. He won with the wishbone. You know, there were years he didn't win a national championship, but there were years when he would throw the ball, you know, 40, 35, 40 times a game. But that's what, and I think what Coach Spurrier, he sees that he has a special guy at quarterback, and he's letting this kid have his he's giving him the reins right now. And I'm sure, just knowing that Coach Saban's background, some of the throws that Tua makes, that's what you got to do with a guy like this. But they're leading with all these teams that can throw it. Missouri's got, you know, they throw for 7 touchdowns.
Let it rip, yeah.
But to me, that's interesting to say the least.
So far, 4 weeks in, no big surprises across the SEC play, except for the Kentucky Wildcats, who I know you're really impressed with, especially defensively.
Yeah, 4 games in. I visited with Tony Barnhart this past week. Tony looks at the whole league much, much, much greater detail than I do. But you just look, you know. Okay, what do we think going in? Alabama going to be really good. Auburn probably going to be there, you know, competing with them. Georgia on the east. LSU's got talent. Boy, if they can get that quarterback just doing anything, okay. Most people thought South Carolina was going to be the number 2 team. They obviously aren't that. But really the only team that you look out there and say, boy, this team's really playing better than we thought they would is Kentucky. You know, Mississippi State maybe not playing quite as well, but we still got some time to go there. But about four weeks in, where it's exactly what I think most of us thought it was going to be, with the exception of Kentucky. And I have intentionally gone back and watched the replay of their games. I haven't ever watched a complete game that they played when it was live. They are playing such good defense right now. And this isn't a fluke where, you know, the ball's bouncing to them and they're getting all these breaks. No. And we kind of saw that last year when Florida beat them because Kentucky didn't have 11 men on the field, and the 11th man they didn't have, it wasn't a nose guard. It was a guy that was supposed to be covering a wide receiver out there. But they are playing really, really good football. You know, I don't, as you guys know, I don't predict or games, things like that. But I'm betting you Kentucky, they're going to beat somebody. And there's not many out there much better than they are that's better than they are, I think, at some point, because they're playing at a very high level right now.
Well, let's start with this weekend. They play at Texas A&M. They're a 6-point underdog in that game. That's a really intriguing matchup. Maybe A&M a little bit better than people thought, not necessarily wins and losses, but how they've played against Clemson and Alabama.
Yeah, they're better coached, I think. And offensively, they're going to put a lot of heat on you because of the Jimbo Fisher. And I think that's the question for Kentucky is, can they continue playing defensively like they're playing? That is almost every place in this league is a tough place to play. But, you know, A&M is a really tough place to play. And, you know, A&M playing a little bit better now. They certainly have the talent to do it. Overall, they probably have a little more overall talent. But I tell you, Kentucky's got, I think, the best running back in the league. And they got a quarterback in this Wilson kid who, you know, he's not going to be playing on Sundays at quarterback. But he can move the ball down the field. You know, he had over 100 yards rushing against Florida, which is showing to be a good defensive team. So big ball game there. And that's a tough thing. You know, good teams are going to get beat, just like, you know, LSU beat Auburn. Auburn's a very good football team. But if the other team plays well and you don't, or maybe they just play better that day, you're going to get beat. But, you know, I don't know what a point differential should be, but I like Kentucky's chances right now where they're playing.
Speaking of tough, Vandy had a tough loss at Notre Dame. A year ago, we talked about the parallels. They get off to a 3-0 start. They get the big win over Kansas State. They get absolutely blown out by Alabama at home. Season goes downhill until the very end against Tennessee. This year, they have that heartbreaking defeat at Notre Dame. They come home. They get beaten soundly by South Carolina. They almost lose to TSU for homecoming this past week. If you're Derek Mason and you're trying to regroup now, they're going to Georgia this week. What are you telling your football team? You're obviously thrilled that you got out of there with the win, but I don't know where the confidence level of Vanderbilt is after nearly losing to an OVC team at home.
Yeah, and I don't put much stock in that simply because that happens. You know, Oklahoma could easily have been beaten by Army a couple of weeks ago. So I think that, you know, you can chalk that up to a lot of different things. I'm talking about coach talking to their team. Georgia, in some ways, similar to the Alabama game. I was at the Alabama game, Vanderbilt game last year. Vanderbilt got steamrolled, and I mean absolutely steamrolled in that game, and they never recovered from it. I'm sure he's talking about this week. Now, Georgia isn't – they're very good on offense, but they're not that type of good. You know, and it's not a matter of how many points you get beat by. If you get beat by 50 to 15 and they throw for 500 yards on you, that's one thing. If you get beat 30 to 15 and they run for 600 yards on you, that's a completely different thing. Then you really felt like you got worn out. So Vanderbilt's got to kind of have to regroup. They're one of those teams that's I think we probably got 4 or 5 in this league that there's some wins out there for Missouri. There's some wins out there for Vanderbilt. There's some wins out there for Tennessee, certainly Kentucky, and South Carolina. But you got to get those wins among that group I was just talking about. You're probably not going to beat Georgia. And if you're unfortunate enough to have to play Alabama and maybe even LSU on the other side, you're probably not going to beat them.
But you think they compete against Florida, who? Vandy?
Absolutely. Listen, anybody's going to compete against Florida for one reason. They're not going to score many points. They've only scored 13 points against Kentucky and 13 points against the state and 8 against Kentucky. So you're going to be in a game with them. Just don't give it to them like Tennessee did, and you're going to be in the game with them.
What about Mississippi State? That's got to be tough. Your coach leaves, goes to a place, shouldn't be as talented in year one, as good, and you lose at home 13-6.
Yep. That's a game that, again, I watched that one again, too. You know, boy, if you're Mississippi State, you sure feel like you should have going in, and even coming out, you feel like you should have won that ball game. But, you know, you if you're a defensive coach in this league and you hold a team to 13 points, you should feel like you're probably going to win the great majority of those.
You can catch Doug Matthews this Saturday, 9 a.m., with Forklift Systems Football Saturday. Coach to Coach immediately follows Football Saturday at 11 a.m. here on The Zone. That's with Doug Matthews, Dave McGinnis, and Larry Stone. And then Big Orange Sunday is the best hour-long discussion of Tennessee football and Tennessee athletics every Sunday morning at 8 a.m. And we need to mention the websites because some people are on their way to church Sunday mornings. Maybe they're running errands and doing different things with the kids on Saturday mornings. CoachToCoachRadio.com is one of the websites where you can find, obviously, Coach to Coach. And then CoachDougMatthews.com, the other website where you can find the podcast.
Yep, 30 minutes after the show's the podcast's up. Chalk Talk comes out at 6 o'clock Thursday night, and the pregame analysis audio part of it comes out 6 o'clock Friday.
Huge thanks to the Tennessee Highway Safety Office for always allowing us to have Doug in studio. Doug, thank you so much, and we'll catch up next week.
See you all then.